kind of longer you were out, the more the mind was wandering. And then I look for comfort in other things. So that's when I started gambling. Started going on the piss a lot more. Just kind of looking for ways really to vent. Because at that point, I didn't understand myself, if you know what I mean. Like now, I understand who I am. I understand that if I'm going to do those things, they're going to be detrimental to me.
Let's roll in with that intro. Don't
just talk it, walk it. Walk is only. Don't just talk it, all right. Walk it. Don't just talk it, walk it. Walk is only. Don't just talk it.
Take two, take two. Rory Pittman, how you doing, brother?
I'm very good, thank you, bro.
Mate, before I give you a little bit of applauded earlier, but I'll say it again because we're on air now, but I just want to say a massive thank you to you. Obviously, what you're doing around the area with the head of the game, your journey alone inspires a lot of people, but inspires people not to like think rugby's them and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, you've kicked on and done so much and continue to. I love the fact how much you promote South Wales, Bridgend in particular, the Valleys. So I know this is a big thank you, but I love what you're about, man. So thank you for being on today.
No, I appreciate that, bro. And, that made me blush then, you being so kind. But, I just proud of where I come from. Wanted to do something different. Hadn't really had the time when I was playing and everything else, and always kind of pushed in that direction. And since starting it, I look back now and I think, what was I doing? You know, it's kind of crazy, really. But it kind of makes you think you've lost a lot of time and everything else. Because I'm so passionate about what I'm doing now, but I appreciate that. Thank you.
No, it's thoroughly deserved, man. And like, I remember. So, how many years has the head of the game been open now?
So we've been going, I would say, around 3 years now. Started during lockdown, so was playing up until that point. Like anyone, I was playing. I was on fire as well, right? I'd lost a lot of weight. I was looking good. And I was playing in Doncaster for Clive Griffiths. Fantastic gentleman.
Yes, I know Clive.
Yeah, yeah. So we kind of got brought into a room, like I guess most people, said, look, this virus is happening. And then got sent home. And, could find myself getting back into that same old mentality of not eating very good, not looking after myself the best and everything else. And I thought, I'm not doing this again. So kind of had this idea for a while of ahead of the game, mental health in sport, through my own personal journey. And then I kind of got pushed in a direction of like, everything I'm doing is centering around food and eating well and finding a foundation with eating well. So I just thought, I'll give it a go. And we rented a kitchen, hired a chef, and then...
Nice.
Yeah, the hard work's never stopped, bro.
it's one of those, isn't it? It grows, and then you just find another way to add more to it, so it's more you devote more time to something else, but it's good because you're passionate about it. And it's amazing to see, like I said, just when I came in here the first time, I was like, thank God this is happening here. Thank God, like, you know, people are willing to invest. And the thing is, when you come here, you're getting quality food.
Yeah.
You're not just getting like, it's a healthy meal, but it tastes like shit. Yeah. You've got a healthy meal, but it tastes better than, you know, your brand, your chains of like bad food. You know what I mean? So I like the fact you can come here. You've got, I think I had you the sweet potato with mince and some veggies on side, but the sauce on it was like so good. And I was like, how is this taste too good? Do you know what I mean?
It's quite mad because I've played in some amazing teams, right, with some phenomenal people. Yeah. But I've never been in a better team than I'm in now. Mm. My staff are phenomenal. The way they care about what they do, the kind of thought process that goes into what they're doing, the energy, the love. And I think then people realise that when they're having our meals and everything else, I mean, it's so, like, I'm so grateful and so proud of them to have these people around me, because, you know, and I've got amazing people. Like, I have my mum work for me, my sister, you know, all these people. And I think that energy that comes from the kitchen, I know it sounds really weird, but somehow that gets into those meals. And and when people are eating them in the caff, and, you know, I'm saying hello to people, or they're posting online. I mean, I could never envision that, you know. It's so, yeah, it's so humbling, I guess. And I'm just grateful for everyone who comes to a head of the game and who believes in us, really.
Yeah. Is it a different high to, like, obviously when you played rugby, you've had some incredible highs, but this, does this hit different?
Yeah, because I think, like you know, when you play, you focus all week on that pinnacle of the weekend, and you get there, and you win, you lose, everything else. But with this, I think there's it's always kind of like you're always going along. Don't get me wrong. When you get new contracts, like we look after the Welsh team. Like, how amazing is that?
Yes,
we take care of Ospreys. We take care of Newport County. We take care of some of the best gyms in South Wales. Like, that is it's phenomenal.
Yeah,
but you don't get those dips like you do. When you're in professional sport, don't get me wrong, if something goes wrong, you know, it's obviously, you know, it hurts, and we dust ourselves down and we need to pick ourselves back up. But you know yourself, when you go into a weekend and it doesn't go your way, or you don't perform, or you get injured, the lows that come from that, you know.
They're not good at all, are they?
No, they're awful.
Yeah, and to be fair, mate, like we spoke before this, like you... when you were playing, especially at the start, you know, coming into the scene, I think there was some mad expectations on you, like, which were deserved at the time, but, like, not fair for a, let's say, you know, like a 17-year-old debuting for the Ospreys.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big, like, I think at that stage in particular, we don't have the awareness to what pressure we're putting on a 17-year-old at that age. You know, you come through the academy system. But, like, there was, like, I think in Wales, we're really big on it. We put so much pressure on people, like, who have shown any form of talent.
Yeah.
That, like, it actually scares them from stepping into that, because it's like, look at the fire I'm about to go into.
Yeah. I think for me, I was from an early age, right? I don't want to say this and be, you know, I always knew I was good at it, because I played for good teams. I'd always had the accolades, you know, people blowing smoke up my ass, basically. And I really enjoyed that. So I always looked for that feeling. So whatever team I went into, I always wanted to be like the main man, or always wanted to be one of the best players. So from an early age, you know, from Maesteg to then Llanharry Welsh, then coming into the Ospreys Academy and stuff like that, I always wanted to kind of have that coach look at me or put his arm around me and be like, yeah, Ro, you know, I always search for that feeling. So, you know, it was quite difficult to grasp at the beginning. Like you say, 17, playing professional rugby. Like, first game was for the Ravens against Pontypridd. Wow. Dale McIntosh's last game.
Dale McIntosh, wow.
I know. And he's such a lovely guy.
He is.
But going into that game, and my friend still, my friend Lee Davis, he's a phenomenal guy. He's a coaching colleague. I remember people like him around me, like, you'll be fine, you'll be fine. I'm thinking to myself, fucking crazy, you know. It's just
wow,
these are grown men. I'm a boy.
How old are you then? Are you
17
years old? Wow. So who was you rubbing shoulders with in that game?
Oh, so if you weren't back then, if you weren't playing for the Ospreys and stuff, you'd be playing Prem Rugby.
Yes.
So you know, in Bagenda at that point, we had, you know, Adam Jones would play, Philo Tiatia had played, Reese Webb, Ryan Bevington, Gareth Owen, some fantastic players. And then Bagenda a force anyway. Mm. You know, you had Chris Stevens.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Who,
you know, we weren't afraid to tell you how we felt. You know, he had his foot up my ass a few times. So it was quite amazing. And then going into the House of Pain, Dale's last game, you know, playing against McIntosh, Nathan Strong, Dacey, Lockyer, all these boys who were really hard, tough players, you know, was quite daunting.
They're a different breed of players, those guys you just mentioned then. They're like, they're the hard nuts. I think that, I would say, you know, the hard nuts now, because the game's changed to what it is now, you know, they'd probably get a red card every tackle. Especially Dale McIntosh.
I think it was just, like you say, it was just that persona as well. Mm. Like, these guys were walking around, and, you know, I'm 6'4", 6'5", and I was big for my age. But when you've got these guys running straight at you, it's like, wow. Mm. You know, it was huge at that point. So, it was a massive day, and I think I did really well out of fear. I've always been able to put myself in that position of when I'm scared, I do, or I'm desperate, I do so well. And I really enjoy, like, I remember coming off, and Brendan Roach and all these people were lovely to me. So, and then we played Connaught for the Ospreys, and I was 17 years old out there, and you're playing against, you know, Irish internationals and everything else. And I think you're playing with, like, Marty Holler, Justin Marshall, all these people. I mean, at that age was...
Freaks of nature, they are. I remember, right, obviously Justin Marshall was great, right, but I really liked Marty Holler. Like, I think...
Unbelievable player.
Like, All Blacks had a conveyor belt of players, right, but he was, like... I remember when he came to the Ospreys, he was just, like, another level. He grew an extra leg, and he grafted hard.
I think at that point, when you actually look at professional rugby, you had, like, Marty Holler... Mm. Stefan de Blanche.
Yeah.
They were so sophisticated and so far ahead in the way they trained them and everything else. Kind of everybody was catching up. Like, you obviously had brilliant trainers, like, you know, Bernie was a brilliant trainer, and all these boys, they were, you know, they partied hard, but they trained hard as well. But, you know, they were, but Marty, Steph, de Blanche, and these people just seemed to be like, the shape on them. It was like they were carved out of granite, you know. So looking on as an academy player coming into the senior squad at that point, it was quite an eye opener to see, you know, how higher the levels were and where you had to aspire to be, I guess.
It's that like we were speaking earlier, that team in particular was like, I don't think you'll get a team like that in Wales ever again, I think.
Do you know when you talk about bin juice, right? And they say, like, right, you know, you subs or boys. Like, I remember standing there with, like, some boys and thinking, like, how is this even possible? Mm. Because that them boys who weren't playing, any other team in Wales or probably Europe at that point would have snapped people's hands off to get them. You know, and then you had underrated players like Steve Tandy was phenomenal. Richie Poole was a great player.
He was.
So you had guys like this who weren't kind of playing all the time, but were still phenomenal players. So, as you can imagine, training and stuff was unbelievable.
You mentioned some. You didn't mention his name, but you mentioned some top end players. And I remember you had Jerry Collins there as well, I think, at one stage. But I heard Alan Wynne-Jones, right? I heard training with him is like he's. He gives the same intensity at training as he does in the field.
Yeah.
And he doesn't mind roughing you up with training. Is that true?
No. Mate, he's so... he's intense.
Yeah.
But the guy is... Let's be honest, he'll go down as one of the best players to ever probably not even just put a Welsh jersey on, but probably is in the world. you know, phenomenal player. And I think he deserves it.
Because
from day one, he set his stall out. Ultimate professional. You've never heard anything about him regarding being on the piss, being, you know, a bad bloke or anything like that. Set his stall out. This is who I am. And has lived by that code. And I, you know, I take my hat off to him. Mm. He deserves everything.
Was he someone that, like, kind of you coming through the ranks with someone you kind of, like, I suppose he was like a bit of a mentor to you? Or was it anyone in particular that you go, that was my guy that I kind of shadowed?
I don't think so much with him, because he was still carving his way. Mm. He just got selected for Wales and I think just starting for the Ospreys and stuff. I was more, you know, your Philo Tia, Bulls, you know, it was like, you know, when the chief walks in and it's just like, okay, we're kind of going to do as we told you. Just that presence, you know. And then I think from there was a few other players, really. Like, I always wanted to be Gavin Ensenbro. And that
you had the silver boots, didn't you?
Did, yeah.
I remember when I was younger, I remember you used to have the golden tan, the silver boots, flip later. You look at the part.
But I think when you look at rugby, and again, a look at what that guy achieved.
Yeah.
He came in, he rocked it. He played it out exactly the way he wanted to play it out, and then he just walked away.
Yeah.
I think when you look on now and some of the, like that kick against England, you know, how do you not look at someone like that and think, you know?
Yeah. He's a freak, mate, and to be fair, I've been in contact with him at the moment, and I'm hoping to get him on the podcast, but he's... I just like what he's about. Obviously, he trains hard.
Yeah, massively.
But, I mean, I just think, like you said, he kind of... I think people thought he still had more to offer.
Yeah.
And like they're like, Gavin didn't reach his potential. But if he didn't reach his potential, for what he did... Like, he played in Lions as well.
Mate,
people forget. Forget about that. He's a freak, you know what I mean? But and just like another... The body on him, mate.
Well, I think when you look at Premiership Rugby at that time, you know, you had... some really, really good players. Llanelli were amazing. Mm. And, you know, I love Scott Quinnell and Delalio, though they were my two teams. And, you know, I was so lucky enough to wear both jerseys.
Mm.
But I just, when we were in school, you know, we were at that point, and then to get to train with these people every day, you know, and he was the first person who kind of, I think, broke the mold in terms of the hair, the boots, the tan.
Just,
you know, and a lot of people followed that.
Yeah.
But he had the kind of, you know, he had the bollocks to say, this is me, this is how I'm going to do it. And fair play to him, he, you know, he delivered.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing I think about Welsh people, like we're quite, how do I say?
Opinionated
very much. If you stand out of line, you're an idiot.
Massively.
Like, you do your job, you put your head down, and that's it. And to be fair, even looking at like Lewis Rees-Sammet right now, I think I've seen a documentary on him, and he's kind of like, you know, I want big goals, I'm going to chase them, I'm going to do this, I want to do something bigger than rugby one day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? He's put his balls on the line there, and he's having a crack. We should get around that. And I think, you know, even when we reflect on games at times, I think we're quick to, you'll have a really good game, but I bet when you finish the game, you'll dwell on the, I could have done that better.
Yeah.
Or I should have done this more. And you're like, hang on, you missed one tackle.
But if we were to step back, right, and like I've seen that documentary and I take my hat off to the guy, I think, you know, fair play to you, amazing. But if we were to step back and if we say go 10 years back and somebody did a documentary like that, it wouldn't have been acceptable.
Nah.
It would have, you know, we weren't kind of at that stage where social media was so accepted.
Yeah.
About pushing your profile online was so accepted. Having so many followers and everything else. It was all about being, you know, that kind of humble, lucky to be playing at that level and lucky to be where you were.
Yeah.
But I think what he's doing is fantastic because... it's not luck, it's hard work, it's dedication, and he's showing everybody, you know, like, he's reaping the rewards. Mm. Like the stuff with Adidas and all this stuff. I 100%. Mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah. I going back to you though, Ro, like I was, to be fair, I've, you know, with you with the silver boots and the fake tan and that, I thought that was the stardom you was going to go on. And to be fair, mate, you've had a, I don't want to act as if you didn't have a great career. You had an unbelievable career. But like we talked about it earlier, you go into New Zealand at a young age.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was unbelievable experience. So, you know, you at the time, I wasn't a bad guy, but I was very, I like to be the joker, right? Mm. But I think that I just wanted to be like liked, if that makes sense. So I wanted to be accepted. So I'd kind of play that part.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it was going to be detrimental to me, you know, going forward and down the line of people having that perception of me. And I believed in myself. You know, I did, I had this kind of mentality. Yeah, I had a massive ego, and that is the truth of it. I knew I was good at something. Mm. I thought probably I was better than I was at that point, and I deserved to be, you know, playing in this team and doing this and doing that. So I think the Ospreys thought that it'd be good for me to kind of go to New Zealand, be involved with big, you know, big players, big organisations, and kind of find that bit of humbleness.
Mm.
So I went to Taranaki, got off the plane, and you're kind of, right, well, I'm, you know, other side of the world. Mm. I don't know anyone. I was living on a farm then, so I got picked up by this guy, Brian Campbell, phenomenal bloke, him and his wife Diane, they looked after me. Mm. Taken down to a farm in Opanaki.
Wow.
And it was kind of like, yeah, see how you get on from here. So pretty massive change.
Mm.
Pretty eye-opening. And I loved it, to be honest. It, it was massive because it allowed me to kind of, for the first time, just be myself.
Yeah, yeah. That's a powerful one. You just said then, be yourself. And there's so many things you said in that that I can relate to, and probably a lot of athletes can relate to. It's just we want to be liked. We want to be accepted. We want to fit in. There's a hierarchy in teams, especially when you're a youngster. You're trying to get approval of the older heads. You're trying to make sure you play well. You're trying to be watched, eyed by like the coaches. And then when you go out of your bubble, you're like, oh, I can be me now.
It was huge. It was like a weight lifted off my shoulder. There was no eyes on me. And I remember getting off the plane on a Friday, and he's like, can you play? And I'm like, look at him. And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm pretty good. And he's like, no, can you play? And I'm like, when? And he's like, tomorrow. I'm like, do you need me to play? Yeah. I'm like, okay. And then I'm expecting now, you know, obviously been playing for Bagend Ravens with Ospreys and all this stuff. And, you know, under 18s Ospreys and all, and 20s, we play at fantastic stadiums, especially with Wales under 20s and stuff. We were with playing in Kingsholm and all these things. So we rock up and we're on like a farm pitch in Opanaki. Now I've got the preds on, you know, everything else. And I'm kind of like, oh, fuck, here we go. Because there's no room for messing about, you know. Everybody's nose is to the side.
Yeah.
Everybody's got black boots on. And it's kind of like, I've got these, I think they were the purple Dan Carter preds at the time. So he's like, have you got studs? I'm like, no. So then, honestly, it was such an eye-opener.
Yeah,
because these Fijians, Samoans, Tongans, and then obviously the farmers.
Yeah.
Mate, it was so tough.
They're long strength in farmers, mate. They're freaks, aren't they?
Well, it kind of just, after that first game, and I'm sitting there, and, you know, everybody has a beer in the change room afterwards. So you have a cold beer, and they give you like a Savoy sausage or whatever's in the clubhouse. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, what have I got myself in for you? So I had to kind of shed my skin fast and fit in. Mm. And I think that's when I had long blonde hair at the time, shave it off, rat's tail.
Yeah, the raddies.
You know, you're like, right, boys, I'm here. I'll buy into your culture. Yeah.
To be fair, I find the Kiwis and the Islanders are great people. Like,
the best, mate.
You buy into the what they're about, they love you, you know what I mean? And they're hard workers, but they'll... one thing about over there, right, it's like a conveyor belt. Like, one person will get injured.
Yeah.
The guy who comes on is just as good.
Yeah.
And, like, I remember that when I was in Australia, I got dropped. And I got dropped to the league below. And I was like, shit, the players here are just as good as the players up there. Like, you're one...
Yeah.
But, like, some of them were like, how I was brought up with sports was train hard, be really thorough with everything. And they were thorough. But I had, like, these couple of these Islanders, as you know, mate, they could probably cruise all week. And you're like, why are you not taking it serious?
No, I know.
Game day, it's like another beast, is there?
Yeah.
Like, where have you been all Monday to Friday?
No, I know.
And it really changed my perception on... You know, when you need to turn it on. Obviously, try and turn it on all the time. But, like, the mind is so powerful and how we're pressured over here that they maybe don't have that pressure in certain areas. But it's just like, go have fun.
Yeah.
But when they have fun, they play their best.
Yeah. And I think that's... I took a lot of that when I went to the 20s World Cup then in Japan. Mm. But at the time, I remember coming in and... there was a guy, his nickname was Batman, right? Now, he was a hard farmer from Taranaki. I think he played like 300-400 games for the club. Mm. It was like the guy was made of like a rod of iron. Like, I couldn't understand how a guy this size, because at the time, everybody was pushing being big, being strong. You know, could you squat 200 kilos? Could you bench 180 kilos? Could you do this? Protein, 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 protein. So I remember seeing this guy and thinking, how is he able to punch so much above his weight? Mm. But obviously, you don't realize that it's mindset. It's not physicality. It's mindset. He's played in so many games. He's so much more experienced than me. He understands pivotal moments in games. He understands when to step on the gas, when not to, and everything else, you know? And that really helped me going into the 20s World Cup.
That's smart, that is. It's when you said that then, Raw, regarding, you know, mindset, and like, for instance, right, and you could probably agree with this, pre-seasons, right, are fairly the same every club you go to. We all lift weights, we all do similar fitness, so we're all pretty much on a similar playing field. And like we talk about now, and obviously what you're doing now, like... The mindset, if you can change your mindset and your thought patterns and your beliefs and how you can instill resilience into your game, that's all it takes, at 1% or 2% to be a different player, like to beat the opposition.
Yeah.
And I think that's, as we know, it's growing a lot more now, like what, you know, but it wasn't back then.
No. And I think as well, we're so, that's the double-edged sword here with social media is... You know, we've got inspirational people giving us stories, giving us messages, you know, like yourself, bro, right? Who are making people understand themselves more, get in touch more with their emotions, get in touch more with kind of being themselves and growing as a person. That it's okay to have done things wrong and kind of made mistakes in life, but it's not who you are anymore. Mm. And it's about outgrowing that and moving forward. But I think, we have these things on like Jordan Peterson and all these people who I think a lot of young men especially now are looking up to and thinking, hang on a minute now, it really does touch a note with them. Mm. And I think back then, for me personally, being a young boy from Llangaina who was used to kind of having smoke blown up his ass, and... being told how good he was all the time and being told he's going to be the next this and given that and everything else, to be dumped in Taranaki.
Yeah, yeah.
With, you know, no, at that time, we didn't have all this FaceTime. Mm. We didn't have any of that, you know. I'm not that old.
But I was going to say, we're sounding old fellas. I get what you're saying.
But we didn't have it.
MSN.
Yeah, you know, that's all we had was MSN and everything else. So, you know... you got to grow up quick. And yeah. I think at that time, it just allowed me to say, well, I got to be vulnerable. I'm here. I you know, and I always look to my dad, right? Like he's a tough man. And I always, like when I was playing, I was hurt or whatever, I'd look to my dad. I didn't have that anymore.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you said that. Wow. That's, yeah, well. That's a hit when it hits me there, because when I used to play, especially when I was younger, and this is a kind of bit of a story of me with injuries and identity, I realized that growing up I liked playing because it felt good, but it actually built a closer bond with my dad.
Yeah.
When I used to play, I'd look at dad and dad would give me a thumb, or he'd not give me a thumb if I wasn't playing good.
Yeah.
And when I stopped playing because of injuries, or like it felt like the world was ending, it was actually a feeling of not feeling enough, because I felt like I had this pressure to make sure that dad and mum, like they spoke highly about me.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they love me more, but this is a whole perception on I created.
Yeah.
But you think, shit, if I don't play now. I remember it one time, right, when I did my knee the second time. And mum didn't mean to say it this way, but I remember calling Australia, saying, mum, I've done my ACL again. I'm going to be out 9 months. And the World Cup was in 6. And she was like, oh, so you're not going to play the World Cup. And she didn't say, how are you?
Yeah.
And she didn't mean it that way, but that was her response. And I remember just hitting me like and deflating me and going, fuck, is this who I am? Yeah. You know, and... But again, it's our perception. But when you've had a fair share of injuries yourself, right?
Yeah. So if we go back to that a sec, though, right? I don't know whether you remember this, right? Mm. But one thing that I used to think, I could not believe it, right? Because you weren't very big.
No.
But we used to play rugby league, right? And we remember back in the blue balls days, right? How amazing was that?
Great days, man.
Mate, we'd be up on Bajem football pitch.
Mm.
And if you look at that team and some boys who were in that team,
yeah.
It was phenomenal.
It was.
But I just used to remember kind of, and at the time, I used to, the only way I can compare it to was like Rob Burrow, right? You were so out of place, bro, right? Yeah. You're like this little dirty guy with his collar tucked in.
Yeah.
And you know, you and your brother there, but you were so small. But you used to like punch so much above your weight. And... you know, your mum's like, you got to look after him. Like, okay. Like, we look after him. So, well, it's amazing, you know, to look back at that now.
Yeah, it's powerful.
And I kind of get, I totally understand what you're saying about the injury thing there. Mm. But I think what we don't take into account is our parents are from a different generation.
100%.
Where tough love was everything.
Mm.
And they have never had the opportunities and privileges that our kind of generation have had. Mm. So, you know, they wouldn't really know how to navigate around that from the beginning.
So true, man. That's so true. Yeah, like, and that's the double-ended sword, like you talk about. We're feeling from what we're feeling right now. We're not actually looking and going, let's put ourselves into their shoes and see what they, you know, man, I think maybe mum today is still scared of her dad. You know what I mean? Like that's just the way it was. Like, but I'm grateful for everything, because these injuries for me, I needed to go through those.
Yeah.
Because I needed to learn these things about me. And I'm actually grateful I went through them, because, jeez, man, if I didn't, and then I come out of rugby, and the hole would have been so much deeper, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I remember this one time in particular, Raw, when we went to Cardiff one day, and I was young, really young. And I remember mum was like, she must have said to you then, look after him.
Yeah.
It was my first ever train trip to Cardiff from Bridgend. And wow, good times that was. Because you're big, mate. You're the guy who looks out for everyone. Do you know what I mean?
I know, but we had those boys around us who was just, like you say, at that time, you know, some of the boys we played with, and they were buggers, weren't they? You know, you kind of Toms and people like that of the world who would cause trouble in a phone box, you know, where it's just that you could go anywhere and you could guarantee trouble would follow us, you know. Yeah. So I think it's lovely to still have those memories.
Yeah, yeah.
And those little things, because if you haven't got them or you don't appreciate them, I don't think you've achieved anything.
So true. So true, man. It's that is really true. Yeah, wow. I want to kind of go back to when you came back from New Zealand. What was that moment like then, coming back? Did they expect, he's going to be he's going to be like a frail boy after going to New Zealand, and then you come back probably buying into the culture and loved it, then coming back to Wales?
So Wales flew me from New Zealand, from Taranaki, to the Under-20s World Cup in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I've rocked up, and all the boys are like, looking at me, I got a big rat's tail, right? And you know what it's like.
Yeah.
I've kind of like got this twang in my voice now. Yeah. I've only been here 15 minutes, right? But I've kind of like, you know, cuzzy bro, everything, yeah, yeah, you know. Yeah. But it was amazing.
Yeah.
And I loved it. It was, the games were phenomenal. You know, France, Ireland, Australia, Canada.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. And we played some fantastic rugby. I had amazing players in the team, me like Tipperick, Dan, you know, some amazing players. And I remember after the World Cup kind of going back to New Zealand with this real sense of like, I'm going to knock this out the park. And then we've got back to New Zealand. And I played in a game, and it was a big game against Tukopa, who were a big team in Taranaki. And my knee was not right. And then over like 2 or 3 weeks, I tried to get through training, tried to get through things, but it wasn't right. Mm. And I kept telling them, and I think they thought I was taking the piss, right? Because there was no ligaments or anything like that. Mm. But I had something that was called a chondral defect. So the bone had actually snapped off.
Wow.
Right in the middle. So obviously, I'm about 17 stone at this point, but it's really a lot of discomfort, knee swelling every day.
So is it the patella that snapped, or is it the kneecap?
The top of the patella snapped. So I didn't know. So I'm keeping trying to play, strapping it up, and it's just, I'm in agony. I'm going home then, and that's when, you know, you're phoning home for comfort. You're looking for kind of a shoulder to cry on, really.
100%.
So I tried and tried and tried, and then I just remember Ospreys just being like, something's wrong here, we need to get him home. So I come home, I went and had a scan, and it was like, you've got a chondral defect. Like, how have you been doing this? And then it's gone from Taranaki, living the dream, World Cup, coming back to Taranaki to kind of like, you're going to be out for a very long time.
Shit.
And that's kind of when, for me personally, and my mental health was the first time that it kind of spiraled. Wow. So had the operation, knew I was going to be out a long time. Sitting at home recuperating, and one night I just can't breathe. So I'm laying there on the sofa, and I cannot breathe for the life of me. I cannot breathe, and my dad comes running down the stairs because I've smacked the vase on the table with my crutches, and he's like, "What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong?" I'm like, "I can't breathe." You know, so he's kind of like, doesn't know what to do, and he's like, "No, you're fine, relax." And I remember he took me to hospital, and I had blood clots in my lungs.
Wow.
So straight on the bed, injections, warfarin. I had a golf ball size in my lung, so it travelled, and yeah.
So the travel from this, the knee surgery?
From the knee.
It went up?
Into my lungs.
Shit.
So that was it then. It just added on months and months of recuperation.
Yeah.
And months and months of kind of head work, really. And I'd never been injured before. So before that, my body was like a furnace, right? I was like, you know, in good shape, everything else. But then you think you can still eat what you want to eat. Mm. You still, and do all this stuff. And I think I went from 116 kilos to 135 kilos.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
And then it was just, yeah, it was kind of a real long road from there, because the heavier you were, the harder it was going to be for rehabilitation.
Yeah.
Then the more kind of longer you were out, the more the mind was wandering. And then I look for comfort in other things. So that's when I started gambling. Mm. Started going on the piss a lot more. Just kind of looking for ways really to vent. Because at that point, I didn't understand myself, if you know what I mean. Like now, I understand who I am. I understand that if I'm going to do those things, they're going to be detrimental to me. And that's not what I do.
Yeah, yeah.
But back then, being a young man, not in control of my emotions, not in a complete understanding of the effects these things are going to have on me. Mm. I kind of guess that's where the beginning of the end really was for the Ospreys, you know?
Yeah, wow. So that ended, I suppose, on top of that then, that ended with the Ospreys.
Yeah.
And that's a double down then.
Well, I come back and Richard Webster was Swansea coach.
Yes.
So Andrew Hoare at the time was
Ospreys.
And this guy went from being my biggest fan, telling me I was going to be a British Lion in a room with my dad and everyone else, and signing me on really good money,
yeah,
to hating me. And I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I probably deserved a lot of it with my behaviour. You know, like I said, I was out with Jerry and all these lot kind of giving it the big one when I hadn't earned those accolades. Mm. You know, those boys, I'd earned the right to be able to do that. So he didn't appreciate that very much. And then my attitude, like I say, I take full responsibility for it. I probably didn't understand it back then, but it really did hinder me. And then he didn't like me at all. So I'd come back for Swansea. Richard Webster was looking after me. I was playing, and I was playing well.
Richard Webster's an old school guy.
Old school fella.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but he's a good person. Mm. And he's a very, very tough man.
Yeah, yeah.
So he looked after me. He really, like, put his arm around me and kind of, I think he could see a lot of himself in me.
Yeah.
In terms of being misunderstood and everything else, you know. So he looked after me, he was a good man. And then they were, yeah, it weren't going to work there anymore. And, you know, I went to, they sent me on loan first to Glasgow.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Which wasn't a bright thing to do.
What happened?
Well, kind of, Glasgow Warriors were not Glasgow Warriors as they are today, you know. So at the time, they were going through, like, I think, a transition. Amazing bunch of boys. Mm. Fantastic city. Really fantastic city.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you're up on Byers Road, Sucky Hall Street. Yeah, large and in charge.
Seems like a good time, if anything.
Oh, my God. You know, some of the nights out were phenomenal. You know, you're in the shed and all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's not much expectation at that point either. Mm. So they had good coaches. Gary Mercer, fantastic bloke. Rugby league legend, yeah, yeah, as well, yeah, you know. And Sean Lanin and people like this. But, you know, Scotland at that point weren't the best. You know, they had really good players. But, it was just, I think at the time they just wanted rid of me, which is fair enough. Mm. But it just, sending a young boy to Glasgow on good money, living in a fantastic flat.
Yeah, yeah.
It just kind of stunk from the beginning, really.
Yeah, recipe for disaster sort of thing.
Yeah, And, you know, before I went, I had the, my best friend kill himself.
Yeah, well.
So, like, you're so screwed up. Because, like, it's really hard to put this, but when you're young and somebody's, and your granddad dies, you can accept that because they've had a long life and they were older and it's still terrible, but you can accept it.
Yeah.
But when a boy who has so much going for him is a beautiful man, lovely job from a lovely family and everything else, who was smiling at you yesterday, puts a rope around his neck. They don't give you the tools for that.
Mm. Wow.
So I think, you know, they wanted rid of me and everything else, and that's cool, you know, I can accept that. But I just wish at that point I would have had a little bit more guidance and a little bit more understanding of how to deal with this trauma and this effect that I'd just gone through, because my way of doing it was, I'm going to fucking live life here. I don't give a shit, you know. So you go to Glasgow, I'm on the piss, you know, I'm doing what I want to do. Yeah. I'm doing all these things and I'm just trying to forget, if that makes sense, you know.
It's a vice, isn't it? It's a vice to kind of deal with that. And like you said, at that young age, to experience that, it's heavy, because like that's their way of dealing with it. Like, did you express to them? Did you go like, hey, like this is what's happened? Or it was in the papers, bro.
So me, him and Jerry were there on a Friday night. Everything was cool. And I remember I was gutted I had to leave because I had a game for Swansea the next day. But I never shit on Webby or the boys. I didn't go out on a piss the night before that. I didn't have that ability to do that and play. So I remember leaving them, and they were, like, we were laughing, joking, everything was fine. And then, like, I'm in the change room, I've got my headphones in, and my phone is going, right? And this is true, this is 100% how it happened. So I've got my headphones in, I'm listening to music on my phone, and it's my friend Joe. Who's friendly with all of us, Joe Heatley, lovely, lovely fella. So
good fella.
I remember him ringing me, and I'm thinking he wants to talk about bloody going on the piss or whatever, you're like, oh, where are we going afterwards, you know? So I'm like, hello. And he's crying, bro. So I'm like, what's wrong? And he's like, Evs is dead, bro. And I'm like, shut up, you Wally. Like, I got to play in a minute. I was like, what do you want? He's like, bro, Evs is dead. And I just remember like being like, you know, I couldn't speak. I was like, bro, don't lie to me. Like, tell me. He's like, bro, he's killed himself. I'm like, fuck, man.
Wow.
And I just, like, do you know, my kind of soul, everything was just sucked out of me at that point, right? And I remember I was crying.
Yeah, wow.
And to be fair, like, Webby and I come in, and he was like, look, I don't want you to play. And I just remember thinking at that time, no, I'll play. I can't think about this right now. I cannot process what has just been said to me. I can't think about this. But I remember being on the pitch and just, you know, I didn't feel nothing. Like, I was
numb,
bro, getting hit. Just nothing was like, I could have been anywhere in the world at that point, and I don't think I would have cared about anything that was happening, you know. And I come off the pitch, and I just remember going to Tondo Rugby Club and just like, yeah, just it was real. And Yeah. It just kind of broke my heart, bro, to be honest.
Yeah, I bet, man. Someone you love so much, that happens. And you're kind of asking, you ask questions yourself. Why, how didn't I know, or what was going on, or did
I? We he was a handsome bastard, right?
Yeah.
He had a good job. He was so likeable.
Yeah.
He was a good rugby player. He was like a really nice guy. And to be fair, first of all, we didn't get on because we were arguing about girls and stuff like this. But you know, that's always the person then who you kind of like end up being friends
you
with.
Vibe with, yeah.
And then obviously I introduced him to Jerry and they got on so well. And it was just like, I could not believe it. So I think, you know, going back to then, the Ospreys, they sent me to Glasgow, and I was just in this rut of, what is life? What am I doing? Like, why has my friend done this? And I just didn't understand it. And I just, to be honest, I give no account of myself up there whatsoever, you know. I wasn't Rory, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it seems like you just... That was your coping mechanisms as well at the time. And like you said, you didn't have the tools to kind of understand what you just experienced. And like sometimes, like you said, having Richard Webster there, someone like that to just kind of take you under their wing.
Yeah.
That's maybe...
No, he was good to me. And every time I see him, you know, I say hello and we have a laugh. He was a good man, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's good. Well, obviously, man, from that, then you went to Rotherham.
Yeah.
How was that? Good time.
Have you ever been to Rotherham?
No, I've never been to Rotherham.
Yeah.
Don't want to, do I?
The people are amazing. Yeah. It's like being in Wales, right?
Nice.
So you play, come round for a cup of, Sunday dinner, they want to look after you, right? Amazing. But we had, Andre Bester was a coach, South African guy, crazy, like.
Proper
crazy. Luckily he liked me, he was good to me, but I just remember being desperate.
Yeah.
Like I'd had such a fall from grace, so Ospreys, Wales under 20s, everything else, and it was just, I was desperate, bro. And out of sheer desperation, I remember agent said to me, there's three people here to watch today, they're looking at you and a few of the other players, and we played in, I can't remember if it's Birmingham, Moseley.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just remember just giving everything, emptying the tank.
Nice.
And 60 minutes, I was done.
Yeah.
But I come off a pitch, and then from there on, it was kind of like Newcastle interested. Leicester are interested, Wasps are interested, and I was kind of like, this could be back on. And I was, it was nice. It was it was like I'd kind of found that fire and reignited it. So I met with Newcastle, met with Leicester, and then met with Wasps. And I don't know, I think it was that pull of the old, Dallaglio, Wasps, Betson, you know, Haskell and everything else. And Haskell had just gone back there, and I was like, this is pretty cool. And then, I ended up going to Wasps.
What an experience that was, man. Like that, I remember you hitting the straps over there. Like that's, your name was in the papers again, and you're doing really well. Who was the coach at the time?
Dai Young was coach.
Dai Young, that's right.
And he's a good man, bro.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of negative stuff said about Dai over the last few months with regards to Blues and everything else. And he's got his way of doing things. But from what I experienced and everything else, if you were honest and if you were straight, he was always good. You know, he was just, you know, he's a tough man. But, you know, fantastic what he did. And I think he showed that because he took a team, you know, didn't have many superstars, you know. We had Haskell, Goody, and a few other good players, but you know, he kept Wasps afloat, and he he built them back to what they were of old, you know.
Was Cipriani there as well?
Not at that point. Thank God.
Imagine you two together.
No, I don't. I don't think that would have gone too well, to be honest. But I think you know, I'd be led astray enough by that point. It was kind of just nice to be in an environment with younger guys who were kind of searching for the same thing. I had a fantastic guy with me who was like my best friend, Josh Bassett. Was one of the best wingers in England.
Wow. Josh Bassett, rings a bell, that does it? Can't be.
He's phenomenal. He was, you know, this young boy coming really timid from Bedford, but he rocked it, and he's played for Wasps, Leicester, Harlequins. Fantastic player.
Wow. Is this a stage in your career now where you're starting to find your feet and starting to feel more, you know, stepping into that person there?
Yeah, definitely. I think at that point, it was kind of like I'd got back to the old me, if that makes sense. So I still had a lot of the negative shit, though, around me in terms of I picked up some bad habits, bro, and I was gambling, and I was... That was no good for me.
How did you overcome it?
The only reason I overcome that was because I'd let so many people down, in terms of my parents, partner. You know, they'd all seen like this other side to me, of lying, being manipulative. Kind of weren't myself, or I'd be like desperate sometimes. Like, you know, you never really know what's going on in someone's life, but I was always kind of heart on my sleeve type thing. Life of the party, really a joker and stuff. But then when you go from that to being really low and sad and negative and this type of bloke. You know, I weren't injured at that point. Like, what was wrong? But it was because I was doing those negative things. I was gambling. And then when I'd lose, I would kind of sink into a hole. So it took me a long time to grasp that. But, you know, don't get me wrong. We've all got our different things. But being in Wasps was fantastic, and we had amazing people around us. Big Tell, Ali James, all these people, you know, like, were amazing people. Stephen Jones was good. He was our backs coach.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was brilliant. But then I found out I was having a son. So, obviously, amazing. Yeah, so Jordan was pregnant with Ruben. And then, basically, it was like, fuck, we got to grow up. And I remember going into Dai. I still had a year left on my contract. And I had to find a way home, basically, because I couldn't expect her to come up and be away from her family.
So as you're saying, you said, you know, Mrs. got pregnant.
Yeah. So I had to... basically, phone my dad. He's like, time to grow up, boy. And I'm like, right, what does that entail? You know, it's kind of like, well, she can't move up to London because she'd be away from her family and everything else. You've got to come home. So, obviously, I'd not burnt my bridges with the Ospreys, but it wasn't going to work for me there. Cardiff were kind of jam-packed at that point with phenomenal players.
That's right.
So, I remember the Scarlets coming in, and it was a lot less money. And I was like, oh, my God. But it was that little draw of, and I've always been, like, a Cornell fan, right? But I always loved, like, Ian Boobier and all these people, right? So, I was kind of like, I could put that jersey on, and I reckon I could do well, don't you? So, I went into Dai. I spoke to him, he was fantastic with me, and he was like, shook my hand, and I was like, that's amazing. And then that was me who gone to Scarlett's, and at that point I was probably the fittest I'd ever been.
Wow.
Because I'd been injured and stuff, and Wasp just got me phenomenally fit.
Mm. That's amazing. And I remember, I used to love Scarlett's growing up. I remember this one time, and we'll talk more about you, but me and my dad, we went up and watched Leicester Tigers versus Scarlett at Parker Scarlett. Well, is that the, no, what was the original say? Is it Parker Scarlett?
Parker Scarlett, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember seeing Martin Johnson as a kid. Mate. I remember seeing him in the line out. Lewis Moody, Martin Corey. But the back rows and the second rows then was Wyatt. Was it Wyatt?
So Chris Wyatt, second row.
And yeah.
Then.
Mike Foyle? Mike Foyle. There was someone else. Who was it? I remember them, and I used to be in awe of them because Cornell was a player, and they had that old school jersey with the Tetley sponsor on it.
Martin Madden.
Martin Madden was
McBride.
Yeah, and I remember
Phil John.
Yeah, and it was like Dwayne Peel was scrum half. I think it was Dwayne Peel. We had Stephen Jones at the time when I was watching. Bubia.
Celesi Fino. Unbelievable player.
Do you know what I mean? And I remember. They used to throw the ball around Scarlett. Yeah. Like that was a Scarlett that I love watching, and that was the best time. So when you talk about Scarlett, I could see, like, you know, when you got Cornell and people like that, you looked up to.
You had Matt Cardy fullback with the long ginger, phenomenal player. You know, Gary Evans on one wing.
Yeah, the guy with the is that
Barry Davis?
Barry Davis.
Yeah. He's, mate, hell of a player.
Left peg on him.
I know.
Like, it's,
but how amazing is that?
Yeah.
That you still remember those feelings with your dad, and that lights you up. Mm. I mean, that's got to mean something, isn't 100%. It? You know, I think sometimes we take for granted the little things 100%. So much, and we get ups and downs and everything else. But I think sometimes you need to sit there and look at those little things, and especially when you have a family and everything else now, those little things can be massive, massive factors for that person when they're growing up, and those memories that you cherish, you know, they mean the world.
100%. That's so true. Even now, like, so I'm back, I'm home for a month this month in the house with the family, and just the scares I've had with Dad recently, in his personal health, it makes me want to cherish every moment. Like, I remember when I used to come back before, I just want to go out with the boys and go catch up with them, but now I'm like, no, I want to devote at least one day of the week where we'll go get a coffee, we'll go get some breakfast and just sit down and talk. No devices, but it's just cherishing those moments, man, and really, like, I don't know, I had a scare where we got told he was going to go. That scared me so much that I want to let him know. I just want to let him know how much he's impacted me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, regardless of the rugby, regardless of everything, just like, I looked up to him. Like, you know what I mean? I think we all look up to our dads. You know what I mean? And we're like, there are little our heroes growing up.
Let me tell you, I think if a parent can look at you, right, and they can feel your energy towards them and your love and admiration towards them, rather than anything you've done, whether you are a successful multimillionaire or whether you work in Tesco's or whatever you do, right, it doesn't mean anything except for if you can look at them and they think, do you know what, I raised that person and they love me, they care about me, That means so much to them. It means more than anything in the world.
It does.
And I think sometimes we like you said earlier on, we want to please them by doing all these things and everything else. But I think sometimes even just sitting there and having like those little meaningful conversations of, do you remember this, Dad? Or how are you feeling today, Dad? Or
true.
It goes so far with them.
Yeah. Well, I was lucky. We had some old photos. We've all got them as your kids or your parents, and I'd bring them out. You bring them out, and you sit there, and you just see the emotions just come back from that memory of you as kids on holiday somewhere. You know what I mean? And just you cherish those, man. But I'll talk about it after. But you know, let's go back to the Scarlets first. But with the Scarlets, mate, that was a great experience. I actually thought you're gonna get a nod to go play for Wales.
That was the kind of like, and when you, we said about our dads here, right? So I'm having a kid. I'm at this point. It's all or nothing, bro. Like it's all or nothing. So my agent is like, you know, I've been with him a long time, and he's like, you have to do this. So it's going to sound really weird, but I used to kind of pretend, right, in my mind, that I was my dad, like that I was this hard working bloke. And I used to try and put myself in that mentality of, I've got nothing. I've got to graft my way out of this. So we played pre-season, and I remember smashing it. And then coming into the beginning of the season, and I get the nod over, like, phenomenal players, like Rob McCusker, mate, who was, like, Welsh captain and stuff like this. So I'm like, wow. So we played Ulster, and I dropped the first two kicks. And I just remember looking up and seeing them, and I just thought to my head, I ain't going to get another fucking game, so let's just go balls out. And then from there, as soon as I hit the button, it was like everything come together. I was running through people. I was offloading. It was like, they ain't going to pick me again after this, so I may as well just throw it all at the wall. And, you know, the tries, the offloads, it seemed like everything I had learned over the years and all these little things, it just completely and utterly come together. And I just could not believe it. I could not believe it. Playing against, you know, someone who I respected so much as well, like Nick Williams was the daddy then, you know. And I remember him coming on with about half hour to go, and he was picking up people like they were, you know, newspapers and just tossing them aside. But we stayed in this game, and I remember I scored in the corner. And just, you know, after the game, man of the match. So first game of the season, Pro 12, man of the match. And I just remember being like, how the fuck has this happened to me? It's gone from, you know, almost getting there and messing it up, or getting injured and not happening, to like I am playing on Parker Scarlets with all these phenomenal players, and I've just rocked it. And this is where, and I don't know, like a lot of boxers talk about it, a lot of people talk about it, this is where I was kind of like, done the interviews, got changed, went upstairs, everyone's clapping, everything. And then I'm sat in my car, and I'm like, is that it? Like, is that it? Because I come in Monday morning, and it was like squats, bench press, back on a grind, video analysis. Then we go on a like thing, and I'm still playing really well, but it's just, I was like, it was massively deflating. Because I'd searched for that feeling all my life, and I'd got it. And, like, you know, obviously, like, playing for Wales or being a Lion and everything else. But at this point, I'd got to this point, and I was like, is that it? And I think that was so demoralizing, really, because I just thought it was more to it. You know, I didn't want to march me through the street or anything like that. But what I'm saying is I just thought I would be fulfilled, and I wasn't. And then certain things started happening, so they tried to get Pivac out of the club, right? They didn't want him there. So these boys got together, revolted, went to the committee, or the board, said, we want Wayne out. So basically, he then finds out who these boys are, and he's kind of like got it out for them. And I'm hanging around with these boys.
Oh shit!
So he's like, I don't want you hanging around with them anymore. I'm thinking in my mind, don't tell me what to do. I'm a grown man, you know. Yeah. I have coffee with these boys. They're my friends. He's like, I don't want you near them. And then that was it, bro. It was kind of like, as soon as he told me no, I was like, nobody's going to tell me who I can't be friendly with. And then, yeah, it was just kind of one thing after another. Picked up a few injuries.
Yeah. What was it with Pivac? What was it about him that they didn't like?
I just think it was the way, you know, this Kiwi fella coming in. And at the beginning, like I said, I really bought into what he was doing and everything else. But I think some of the stuff, like, bite down harder on the gum shield and this old school mentality. Yeah. And where rugby was at that point, I think it was, like, outgrown it, if you know what I meant. But he had brilliant people around him as well. Like, you know, he had such a good coaching staff.
Stephen Jones.
Steve and then Byron and everything else. Like, you know, it was kind of, a lot of boys didn't like it, but a lot of boys kind of saw it as an opportunity as well to kind of get on with him. Because if you got on with him, then your life was pretty easy.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the boys who didn't, like I said, McCusker, Scarlett's legend, played for Wales, captain, all the stuff. As soon as he went against Wayne, that was him done.
Really?
Phil, John, you know, these people, it was the same. So it was one of those then. And then I picked up a few injuries, and then the kind of, it just started from there. I went testing with Wales and stuff. And I thought it was going to happen. I really was like, this is going to happen. And then just snap bicep. It's like back to square one. And it just, fitness declined. And then he got on top of me and everything else. But I don't, looking back now, I'm not angry at all. I'm not bitter at all. It's my own fault. I should have understood at that time, again, you know, being injured, you need to look after yourself better. You need to be more mentally prepared for what's coming towards you. I should have gone about things a bit differently. And I'm fully accepting of that. So, looking back, like I say, we do all the food for Wales and stuff, and I've seen him, and I've never, you know, been confrontational or animosity towards him. As far as I'm concerned, you know, I hope he's happy. I hope, you know, I don't care, bro. I let all those feelings go, you know. I had an opportunity to play for a great club.
Yeah.
I did well when I played, and I can live with that. I'm at peace with that. So, you know, that's what's the nice thing for me.
It's good, man. It's good to know that you're at peace with it, because so many people are not at peace when they leave. And when they leave a sport, or the bitterness of a contract gets terminated, or coach doesn't like you. That's a hard one for a lot of people. If a coach doesn't like you, and then you've got another coach who loves you, you're like, what is it about me? Can I change? But sometimes you're like, your face don't fit in some places.
It doesn't. And look, I would be the biggest liar on earth, right, if I said that I couldn't. I used to visualise him, mate, being in our stadium, standing there, right, with our red jersey on. I used to visualise it. And would I have loved that? Of course I would have loved that. But it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But everyone's like, you should have played for Wales. You should have done this. I should have done a lot of bloody things.
Yeah.
But I haven't. But how awesome is it that I'm at the point in life now, right, where, okay, I didn't fulfil them dreams, but I'm fulfilling the other ones I had, and I'm able to put my energy in that direction now. Because how many times have we seen it when it doesn't happen for someone, right? Or they don't get to where they're supposed to go, or they don't achieve what they're meant to achieve, and it kills them. They're never the same person afterwards, or they're bitter, they're twisted.
Yeah.
I'm going, none of that, bro.
Man, that's a good place to be. Yeah. And I remember this one thing I did when I stopped playing originally. I really struggled because it was like it was as if like the world took it from under my feet because of injuries. It wasn't like, yeah, maybe it wasn't good enough at stages, but I mean, it wasn't like coaching. Like it was like injury, ACL, 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 other injuries. And I remember the stage I got told by the doctors, "You're done, mate. 3 ACLs. You can't do it no more." And I really struggled for a long time, like just the fact that I couldn't go and play, or just it wasn't even about money or level. I just couldn't go play,
yeah.
And that hurt me a lot. And I remember this one time I got a good mate over in Australia's island, Irish, Paddy, his name is, surprisingly enough. And he goes to me, "Mate, look, I think you should give this a crack." And I remember it was like he really started to open my eyes up to like psychedelics and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not a massive psychedelics, but I've got nothing against them either. I'm no tree hugger, that's for sure, but I am open to it. And I remember he said, look, he was a Muay Thai fighter, and he said, like, whenever I did this thing, I try it. And he got me onto DMT.
Right.
And I remember, mate, at this stage, I was just meditating. I wasn't doing anything else. I was just meditating. And he goes, put it in a safe environment. He goes, "I'm just going to watch over you." Put some meditation music on. And he did, like, these 3 hits.
Yeah.
I think I remember the last 3rd one. I was like, I don't even remember if I really took it because I was like, and then next thing I was like lying down. I was lying down with this meditation music on. I remember seeing all these amazing colors, but it was like I couldn't control anything. It was like, you're not in control, you. And I went through a few stages of this trip. But what I seen on one of them was, it's like this lady goddess was taking me through it. And anyone who's never done psychedelics probably thinking, what the fucking, what is he on about you? And I seen a vision of myself in rugby clothing, and she looked without saying the words, and she just grabbed like a zip from my ass and just zipped over my head down to my feet, and this suit fell off me, and I was a naked mannequin of me. And she goes, "That's who you are.
Yeah,
like you're not identified by these things, they're just parts of what you've done, but that's who you are." And it was like a moment for me of like a self-acceptance, self-love, and more knowing, like, that's, be proud of that guy, because they're just masks that you put on stages of your life to fill. And it was a powerful moment, and, you know, changed my whole perception, and kind of just made me more, it's a lot of things I can't really put words to, but changed my perception on gratitude, just being grateful for the little things. And you know, another thing I learned from it as well was when I was playing, I used to be really bitter. So if we were in the same position, no matter how much I liked you or you, I couldn't like you because you were my position. And now I love seeing everyone do well.
Yeah.
I like, we've spoke about this. Like this shop, I love seeing this do well. Alex Evans, we talked about Bacon. Love seeing him do well. Levi, all of these gyms in Wales. As long as you're putting Wales on the map, I love it. But 5-6 years ago, I'd be like, fucking, look at his dick. What does he think he is? You know what I mean?
But that's the thing, isn't it? You know, if you, like I said, you know how much you've grown.
Mm.
But look at now the impact you are having on other people's lives in terms of, you might be having a phone call with a guy, right? And you might help him, you might get him motivated, you might change his perception on things, everything else. But you're not just changing his perception. Mm. He might have children. Mm. He might have a wife, a girlfriend that he's then speaking differently to. He might be going into work and impacting somebody else. Mm. So that positivity is so infectious.
Mm, it is.
So even though you're like there helping that one person, you don't realize the ripple effect that that's having. And like, saying what you're saying there about these local people, right? But Gend, for too long, has been so poisonous, right? With people running each other down, you know, talking shit about each other, trying to, you know, what what's the point? There's so many fantastic things in Bridgend at the moment. The restaurants are thriving, right? We've got amazing gyms. We've got, like you said, Addicts, Pennebon Fitness. We've got Kong's, K2.
Yeah.
You know, all these amazing gyms. Mm. We've got people training people to be fit, healthy, be the best version of themselves. You know, you've got Beat Bakehouse, which is doing amazing things. You know, you've got all these different stuff happening. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And ahead of the game, I'm proud that we're part of that and we play a little part in that.
Yeah.
But I just think sometimes the more you kind of G people up, you know, like me and Scott from Who Culture have this thing, right? I say, bro, you're doing amazing. He's like, no, you're doing amazing. I'm like, bro, you're doing pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And like, I look at him and I think, do you know what? I take my hat off to you.
Powerful.
You know, you're doing amazing. And I see him on his bike and you know, everything else. I think, fucking fair play to you.
Yeah.
I don't look on and think, oh, you know, you got this or you got that. I think I take my hat off to you.
Love that.
And I think if more people were thinking in that way, and then we G'd each other up more, and like I say, if I've got a network that you can tap into, why shouldn't I help you? Because you might get to a point where, you know, you've gone so far up and you're like, well, Pitman actually looked after me.
And it's 100%. It's all about looking out for each other.
If you can pull people with you, then that's what it's all about, truly. You know?
So true. So true, Ro. Like, there's a thing on, I read this book on it, right? And they were saying about, right, in the most westernized countries, they did this test and they said, in the most westernized countries in America, the UK, I think in Australia, they're like the top three places for the highest level of anxiety and the highest level of loneliness. But bearing in mind, we're most populated countries as well. But what they realized, the lowest levels of anxiety and loneliness were in these little tribe countries, like villages, towns in the remote areas. Because what happens is whenever someone does well, they all get behind them.
Yeah.
But then whenever someone does bad, they all get behind them.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what are we doing wrong, which they're doing right? And the way, you know, how can we bring that perception into this place? And it was a lot of things I learned. Like, even this woman, Shaz, she's a Kiwi woman. And I met her in Australia when I was 19. I played with her nephew, Slade King, and I still keep in touch with him now. And I was 19 in Australia on my own. Played a game, and Slade was like, hey, every other night we go over to my auntie's house, we have food. See you there tonight at 6 o'clock. And I went there. Treated me like I was their own.
Yeah.
Fed me like I was their own. They said, all right, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was what I needed that time in my life at 19 on my own. And I think what I learned, and like you know, talk about earlier about when we're helping one person, we're not helping one person, we're helping a load of people off that, the branch off it. Just like I looked at the sign there earlier where you've got the cogs that go off it. It's not just one cog spinning.
Yeah.
There's 10 other cogs that go with it when you've impacted one. And yeah, it's powerful, man. It's a powerful thing. But that's my image now. I'm like, I want to take that mentality. Yeah. It's so easy to be negative. It's like the easiest thing to do is be negative.
It's a coward's way out, mate.
Yeah. But changing that perception and changing it. Like, I don't know. I thrive off, like, I could go into any gym, go any village, and I'd be like, I love this, man. I love what you're about. Keep doing it.
Yeah.
Just walk off. There's no incentive in it, but it's like, that I want to tell you, you're doing well, and yeah, like it's like I said about this joint and ahead of the game, man. I love what you're doing and collabing with people, growing it, promoting. I seen the van outside, the big truck that you've got.
Yeah,
no, what is it? It's good, man.
It's all like we got fantastic people around us, and for us, I never envisioned being in this spot. And again, like I'm just so grateful. But I just think for us now, it's a massive, massive opportunity for, like, my chefs are not just chefs. They're cooking for some of the biggest sports stars, for some of the young aspiring athletes in Wales. It's more than just food. The same with my coffee stuff, right? it's not just coming in and grabbing a cup of coffee.
Nah.
They make people feel good.
Yeah.
They're like, how's it going? And they might not get an answer straight away. And they're like, you know, have a lovely day. Like, it's more than just serving food. It's more than just serving coffee. It's an environment where people come into, and when they leave here, it's like, I want to go back to Edit the Game because it made me feel good.
Mm.
And it made me feel like welcoming. Mm. It made me feel safe. And that's what I enjoy most is, you know, is like I say, it's on the wall. Be kind to your mind.
Mm.
Look after yourself. If you want to come to an environment and just be around good people, then we're here for you.
Love it.
There's other businesses around, like other amazing people doing other things. And, you know, like I say, if we all got behind all these people in Bagend, and not only Bagend, you know, these other people in Llantris and Pencoed, all these places, and supported them as well, and spent less money, you know, going to supermarkets and stuff like that, I think it's phenomenal.
Mm.
Because you're never really going to find out the potential these people got with their products and everything else if you don't back them.
Yeah, because you all your meat and everything is local.
So everything has full traceability. So we try and use, Black and White Pig Company. So that's Gareth Owen, who was...
Oh, my steak boy.
My steak boy.
Wow.
So again, you know, fantastic player.
Yeah.
Walked away from rugby and is now a butcher.
Wow.
You know, but the meat is fantastic. They raise their own pigs in my steak.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, our eggs are from Betos.
Love it.
We make sure, like, our vegetables and everything else, like, fresh.
Nice.
And I think for us, that is massive, knowing that it comes in, it's cooked, prepped, it's cooked, it's packaged, and it's out the door.
Yeah.
And, like I said, for me, I'm just glad that I found something that I love waking up to every day.
Yeah.
And the best thing is coming in here on a Saturday morning, I've got my kids that, you know, they're telling me I don't own nothing, they own it. And, you know, they're demanding what they want. But I just watch in awe sometimes because I can't believe that I've managed to kind of get away from all that bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
And shed that skin of being that person to just enjoying, you know, the surroundings, enjoying watching my staff make people feel welcome, enjoying watching my kids eat, you know, their bacon sandwich. And it's like we've built this place, and I sometimes still can't believe it.
Yeah, wow. So where do you think you get your form of, like, gratitude from? Like, I know you've always been a happy chappy, but I mean, like, there's been some dark days.
Yeah,
but where do you seem to keep this energy flowing and this mindset? Because I love, like, you've recognised in me that I'm like that, but I've recognised that you're very much promoting not just Ahead of the Game, but you'll promote everyone else. So where does this come from in you?
I think it's because I've been an arsehole. And I have looked back now and I think, you know, like I said, if someone was playing instead of me, I'm like, how are they playing instead of me? I'm way better than that guy.
Yeah.
And bringing that negativity and that kind of poison, you know, and I don't want any part of that.
Mm.
You know, now, people can say what they want about me or whatever, you know, but I know who I am now and I don't bring that to the table anymore. So that's what makes me kind of love this and be so grateful and everything else is I'm grateful I'm not that person.
Yeah,
but
wow.
I'm grateful I've got to experience it at, you know, 34 years old. Some people, you know, they're 50, they're bitter, they can't.
Yeah.
I'm 34. I've had a good crack at it, you know. Did some good things in rugby, did some bad things, but I am not that person anymore. And I think for me, that's what I love and enjoy.
Love that. Love that. Well, you've got something else pretty amazing just around the corner going on. Do you want to talk a little bit about this?
Well, so we've built a venue. It's called Off Grid 31. And it's amazing. For me, it was kind of looking for something with a point of difference. Like, again, being passionate about Bagend and everything else, there's always this thing of, you know, there's nowhere to go in Bagend, or there's a few good places now, like Hoonabar, Dan's doing good things up in...
He's got La Cachina,
Cane and Rye. You've got Knowlton Corner and these things. Nice. But why isn't Bagend, it's such a hub of talent.
Yeah.
Why are not the big names coming to Bagend? Well, we haven't got the venue. So
that's true.
So we built one. So I think it's a scary prospect because it's a big project, but we've done it now and we've taken it on. But I really feel like we can bring some of the biggest names in the world to Bagend.
Love it.
Like, you know, we've got Brendan up the road, who's Tyson Fury's bodyguard, who's got Lion's Den Gym in Llantrisant.
Wow.
Why is Tyson going to Swansea and why is he going to these places? Well, we would love him in Bagend.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Paul Gascoigne going to Swansea, going to Cardiff, going to all these different places. Let's get him to Bagend.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all the boys on a match day from past with the rugby, they're going up to Cardiff. Well, let's keep them in Bagend.
100%.
Let's get them commentating on a Six Nations game. Let's get some Irish players down. Let's get some Scottish players down. Let's show them the talent pool that we've got here and, you know, how passionate the people are in Bagend about their sport, about their music, about their events.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Propane Lane, Tom Such,
that's right,
Amiga Blend, all these amazing bands. Well, now they've got a place where they can kind of, you know, showcase on a bigger level what they're doing.
Love that. So it's going to be, I don't know how much you can share of it yet, but it's going to be like live events, bars or restaurants or food.
So it's got full street food kitchens in there, which will have some of the best food in South Wales.
Nice.
So BRGR is at the top of Bagend already doing mental things. That guy is like the Nutty Professor. You know, he's got 2.5 million views on a video on TikTok from his King of Kings box. Ricky Jones, phenomenal bloke. You then got Steve Gallagher, who's going to be doing stuff up there. The food will be incredible. Tony, Christina, all these people, they're going to rock it. And then the bar then, again, we're speaking with people like Bang On Brewery across the road. We're trying to promote that localness.
Good.
But it'll be a safe venue, working with South Wales Police, working with Bagend Council, which have been fantastic again for me, creating strong bonds, strong links, just creating our venue. And I think when people see it, they're not going to believe us in Bagend.
Wow. I have to get you mayor, mate. Mayor of Bagend soon. Is that the next thing?
To be honest, as you can see, I've gone grey. I've got bags under my eyes. And I'm on about 15 coffees a day at the moment. So, look, I just believe in life.
Yeah.
That you have momentum.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it so much at the moment. I just don't want it to stop.
Love it.
So, I love building things.
Yeah.
And look, it might not work. Like,
I think it will work.
Yeah, but it might not work, right? But I tried it.
I love it.
So, do I give a fuck if... Like, I want it to work, but do I care what anyone thinks? Yeah. No. I'm gonna... I've tried it. I've built the venue. Like, if they come, it'll be amazing and, it'll be a sight to see.
Mm.
But if for some reason it doesn't work, then I'll probably get another stupid idea in a few months and go with that as well, you know, so...
That's powerful, that is, and I say that to a lot of people, right? They're like, you know, I'm scared, I'm fearful of doing this, I'm fearful of doing that, and I'm going, okay, ask yourself this question, right? When you're on your deathbed and you reflect on your life and you lie there and you go, you know what, it was good life, but I wish I give something that really gives me a deep passion, a deep ignites something in my belly. I wish I gave that a go instead of letting fear of failure or fear of what other people may think about it or if it looks stupid. Like, who really cares? As long as you want to give it a go and it makes you happy. But I would rather know, I'd rather try and it failed than never try at all.
And that's it. You know, the first time I blew it with rugby, or you'll never play for a professional club again. Then I got back to it. Then I fucked that up. And then to come back again. And like I say, if it doesn't work, then I can't say that I haven't given it 100% and everything else. It'll just be from, you know, it just wasn't the right time for it. But the moment I sit back and let people dictate what I'm doing or let my worries about what they're thinking about me dictate how I'm going to live my life, then I'm in serious trouble. You know, so...
Love that.
I just hope that, like I said, we build a venue that people are proud of. Like, same like ahead of the game. If you want to come down, amazing. If you want to be part and support it, amazing. Thank you so much. But, you know... You are going to get people who are like, you know, I'm not getting behind that.
Yeah.
But I can't control it.
Yeah.
I don't care about it, bro.
Yeah.
As far as I get turned, you do you, I'll do me. And we go from there. But I'm just lucky. Like I said, I appreciate you asking me to do this because I haven't done this in a long time because I've always felt like we spend so much time talking about negative stuff that we forget all the positive stuff that is happening around us. And like I say with you now, you know, obviously you played in the Rugby League World Cup and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, so you fulfilled it. You ticked the box. You've done it and everything else. But what you're doing now...
It's far bigger, man. It makes me...
come on.
Yeah.
You know, but it's... You know, like I say, people will look on everything else. But you're impacting on such a bigger level. You might have scored some good tries, right, and look good on TV, running about. But the impact you're creating now is on such a bigger level. Mm. I think you look back at this in a few years' time at when you started your journey, and you won't realise the impact you would have had on people until you kind of get to that point where you're able to look at it all and think, wow.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right, and I appreciate that because it is... I when I went back to that World Cup, I didn't actually, like you said, I remember after the game, kind of going into the hotel room and going like, all the boys are getting on the beers, and I was like, I don't even want to do it.
Yeah.
I just want to go to my bed, and I just didn't. It didn't fill the void. It didn't. What I had the expectation of it wasn't that, and now like, but I was already transitioned by that stage. But this gives me so much fulfillment, like seeing people do what makes them happy and doing it and then seeing the benefits of the losses, of the wins, because that's what rugby is really.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster and we're just a part of the game. And that's life. Do you know what I mean?
It is, mate.
Yeah. So
we got out. We got some good memories from it, some good experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Learned some tough lessons. But you know, they've molded us, I think, into the people we are today, with the you know, the things you can be proud of and everything else, like, and I think it gives you that resilience of when you do get the tough days and you do get the kind of negativity or things don't go your way, or maybe you can't change someone and help someone that day and you feel bad about it. I think it gives you that resilience to say, do you know what, I didn't do it today, but maybe tomorrow, I will help someone, and I will have that impact on them. And the more you say it, and the more you believe it, and the more you kind of create it, the more you're able to do it.
That's so true, man. So true. Look, man, it's been a pleasure having you on this podcast.
Thank you.
I feel like we could talk all night, and another 10 coffees, you might. But one thing I want to ask you,
bro.
I want to ask you, man. I always ask all my guests, what are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for my children, I'm grateful for my family, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to finally become myself and being able to be myself because it's made me so happy to be able to just be me again. Not be Rory the rugby player, not be Rory, you know, trying to be popular or Rory or this. Yeah. Just be bloody Rory.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for the chance that for the opportunity that I was able to find that.
Man, I'm grateful for you coming on this today and just sharing some light on your story, your journey, man, and grateful for what you're doing for our area. Really grateful for what you're doing for Bridgend, the valleys, everywhere. Having a crack, man, that's what I like about all this. You're just having a crack.
There's good people around you, bro, and I think, like, you know, do you know what I mean? We were brought up here and everything else. There's good people here. Yeah. And I think the more we say it to each other, the more we believe in each other, the more we G each other up, then the more we're all going to thrive. And ultimately, like I said, I hope I see you up here one day like Jordan Peterson.
Maybe one day, man. But yeah, appreciate what you're doing. So thank you so much, brother. Yeah,
thank you, brother.
Don't just talk it, walk it. Walk is only. Don't just talk it, walk it. Don't just talk it, walk it. Walk is only. Don't just talk it, walk it. Walk is only.